All righty. All right. Again, thank you, everyone. If everyone, I want to keep going, so maybe we can just move right on to, is there any public comment? All right, don't see anyone. Kim, no one raising their hand? All righty. Can I have a motion to approve the December 6th, 2022 meeting minutes, please?
So moved, Lori Spielman.
Thank you, Lori. Is a second?
Second, Peter.
Great. Thank you. Although, any changes or suggested edits? All righty. Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the minutes as presented, please say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Anyone abstaining? All righty, great. Moving on to reports from the chair and staff. I don't have anything to add at this point, although when we get to item number 7, I would like to talk a little bit about future agenda items, make sure that we're meeting the needs of the member towns and members of the committee. So with that, Matt, moving to you.
Thank you, Peter. Good afternoon, everyone. It's wonderful to see you today. Hope you had a good holiday weekend. I just have 4 or 5 things, Peter, that I'll move through rather quickly. The committee, you're probably all aware, but we did submit 2 applications to the state totaling $500,000 in order to enable us to assess regional approaches to stormwater management. I want to thank Maureen Goulet for putting those together. Stormwater management, as we know, is a big issue for us across the region. And we should hear back from DEEP on those applications in March. So I'm very optimistic we'll get at least one of them, hopefully both. But you know, that'll enable us to continue the conversation we had some months ago. Secondly, another item we've discussed in the recent past, the ability to create regional commissions for land use matters and then other things such as fair rent commissions, ethics commissions, et cetera. We do have that item in our legislative agenda for 2023, as you may have seen. And I will be meeting with representatives from the legislature's Planning and Development Committee later today, and expect to raise that issue. So hopefully the legislature is interested in that and we'll see some progress this session. Moving on, just want to make sure you're aware of an item that the executive committee will be discussing tomorrow and then the full policy board. Some of you are members of the policy board. Our office lease is up at the end of August of this year. And we have retained a broker to assist us in looking at options, including our current space. And we have identified a preferred option at another location in Hartford. The executive committee will tour it tomorrow and discuss it in executive session tomorrow. If the executive committee is interested and wishes to pursue our recommendation, we will bring that to the full policy board. Just wanted to make sure you all were aware of the fact that that was pending. Just 2 more items quickly, Peter. Our waste management project, we're making progress there. And Robin, we should be receiving the draft report for task 2 to review at a staff level this week, correct? And that is the short-term recommendations.
That is correct, Matt. We'll have those from RRS and our consultant Tetra Tech this week, which will provide 1 to 5 year opportunities and strategies on waste management and diversion.
Great, good, thank you. And I know some of you are participating in that effort, such as Peter.
So Matt, just to clarify that, it's going to staff, and then is the steering committee going to receive that simultaneously, or is that will be subsequent to staff's initial review?
Subsequent. I think last time around we noted some issues that need to be cleaned up, and I'm sure you experienced the same thing in your own community. So we're going to review it, and once we feel comfortable with the report, we'll schedule a steering committee meeting to review. That steering committee meeting isn't already scheduled.
Is actually February 14th. And I can send out an updated reminder again, just so we make sure everybody does have that on their calendar.
Thank you, Robin.
You're welcome.
And then my last item, Peter, I'll actually defer to Pauline for her report. Pauline, if you and Aaliyah can just provide the committee with a quick update regarding our website and our transition to a monthly newsletter. Thank you.
So I'll take on the website. It's actually, the soft launch is actually today, knock on something. So by the end of day today, there'll be a new website on our website, hopefully, and we'll have a smooth transition. Staff will be receiving training next week for that. And I'll give it to Aaliyah for the monthly newsletter update.
In terms of the monthly newsletter, that will also be coming out tomorrow. And we highlight Matt's first blog post. In addition to the Cry Connection newsletter that we send out through Constant Contact, we've started freshly this year, the Cry Connection on LinkedIn. And that's really going to focus on Matt and other leaders here at CROG to build that thought leadership out. So if you haven't seen his LinkedIn blog, you can check it out in tomorrow's newsletter. We have some other updates, including Robin, can you refresh me on the grants that CROG just got? The three?
That's correct. Yeah, actually, I don't know if we're going to talk about this a little later, but actually we did receive three of our four RPIP grants, which is very, very exciting. So those about $1.4 million we'll be working on over the next 3 years with different projects.
Yeah. And other news are CROG meetings. We have a really nice profile of Ryan, who's a transportation planner. And that wraps us up for our newsletter. And just for folks who don't remember, we used to be biweekly, but now we are moving to a monthly newsletter. So you will get a CROG newsletter each month. Thank you.
Great. Aaliyah, question on.
Sorry.
Just a question on the, in terms of if member towns have suggestions or ideas for the monthly newsletter, is that okay to send those to
Yes,
whom?
Definitely. Send those my way.
Great. So keep that in mind, member towns. So, all right. Matt, are you good or you want to go to Pauline for any additional updates?
I'm good. I was just going to ask Pauline if she had anything additional for the committee.
The only thing I have is that we're collecting fuel bid quantities, and that's a non-piggybacking bid. So if you haven't submitted your fuel bid quantities yet to Kim, please do so.
What type of fuel?
Fuel oil. Sorry.
Thank you.
So we just did gas. We're now doing fuel oil. Sorry.
well, gasoline was relatively favorable given the market conditions. Thank you. Okay. Great. Any other reports, Matt, from staff? Great. All right. We have two business items today. We have a guest from UConn, from the Energy Resilience Program. And so I'm going to hand that over to Matt or Pauline to do introduction.
Thank you, Peter. This is Matt. So very pleased to have Kurt here with us today. I think his office had been in communication with us a couple months ago, just looking for an opportunity to outreach to our member towns, two municipalities in the state through the COGS. You know, this is a way we can get a number of towns together and allow Circa to get the word out about the good work that they're doing. So Kurt Malin, thank you so much for attending today and happy to turn the floor over to you.
Great, thanks a lot. Let me see if I can pull this up quickly. Hold on. I have multiple screens here. It's going to take me half a second to pull the right one up. Circa presentations, CRCOG presentation. I'll make this. It's going to be, it sounds like you guys move fairly efficiently. So I will try to follow your lead here. Where is my, there it is. Okay. Share. All right. It's funny. I'm a Google Meets guy. I'm not a Zoom guy. Can you see that PowerPoint?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Looks great, Kurt.
All right. So there it goes. Okay. So nutshell, I'm not going to go into huge detail because it's really just an introduction. But for those of you who don't know what Circa is, it's part of UConn and really part of the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, funded by the state legislature in response to, largely in response to Superstorm Sandy and the recognized need that many of the communities affected by storms and climate change type events were also the communities that were probably not that well equipped to handle the events or to prepare for future events. So it was formed to deal with stuff like that. It's a group of scientists, policy folks, and others who can recommend things like good changes to your zoning bylaw, issue grants with money put up by the federal and state governments, and just a multitude of things to do with addressing climate change. So actually about a week ago, we officially started this program. We call it Local Energy Resilience. And the nutshell is this, it's during snowstorms, one of the first things to go out is power. The goal is to the real goal of the program is to work on microgrid type structures or fuel cells on buildings that need to stay online during storm events, such as like senior housing, hospitals, critical care centers, things like that. Let's call it grid edge or distressed municipalities and potentially environmental justice communities. So if we had sort of what we'd really like to be working on, it's that. But along the way, there's a recognition that really, when you talk about grid resilience, anything to do with promoting solutions to climate change, such as renewable energy, plain vanilla solar on landfills, things like that, we're not going to say no to. We're going to work with towns on sort of any and all the above. But I said the ultimate goal is really getting renewable energy microgrids. So we're not only getting ahead of the problem in terms of the fossil fuel generators and pulling some of those offline, ideally, but we're going to put buildings in a position to be online during superstorms. But as I said, we realize that's kind of a limiting goal right now, given some of the technology. So really what we're trying to do in layman's terms is there's a huge pile of money out there, mostly due to the Inflation Reduction Act and some state programs that it's very, very challenging, except for the savviest of energy developers, to understand and get and how to allocate, especially when it comes to municipalities. And there's a lot of municipal incentives. So our job is to really help municipalities access that money and access those programs, either themselves or through, RFPs to private developers to put up renewable energy systems and or more specifically microgrids. So, it sort of goes to the Connecticut likes to say they do all their energy development in orderly and sustained fashion, or all their new renewable energy development. But the problem really is the developers, and not putting down the developers, because without them, a lot of these things don't happen, are driven by different things than order and sustainability, like rates of return and finding cheap land and finding sort of the easiest path forward. So we're going to set a pull back a little bit and give the control back to the municipalities to focus on the buildings and other areas we think matter the most. Nutshell, this is a 700 plus page act, but some of the interesting things that happened in August were, most of the renewable energy incentives in the world are tax credits, lots of tax credits. And if you're a municipality and you don't have a big federal income tax bill, you weren't really in a good position to build a lot of these facilities. So in IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, they also added a direct pay option, a cash option. So instead of taking, for instance, 30% of a project cost in terms of tax credits, or if you're a municipality and you want to build, say, a small solar facility, it's too small really to let a private developer run with and lease, you can actually get paid directly in cash from the treasury now. This is just sort of a sampling of some of the stuff they've done. So previously, and I don't know if how many are of you are familiar with sort of the growing popularity of lithium ion batteries. Previously, in order to put a battery storage system in place, you really had to couple it with solar because solar had all the financial incentives and batteries had none. But if you coupled a battery with the solar, it brought it into that world. And now you can actually put a battery in a building for various reasons, which are probably too detailed to go into on this call, and collect either a tax credit or that direct pay option. You know, other things, and I'll probably blow through these, but you know, the cost to interconnect to the grid were often prohibitively expensive. Those are now subject to the tax credits, which previously they weren't. And notably for municipalities in particular, they have, so it's a 30% direct pay or tax credit. When I mean 30%, if your project's $1 million, you're going to get $300,000, approximately $300,000 back in terms of a payment from the treasury for putting that project up. And there's the potential to get even more. And so in IRA, you can get another 10%, making your tax credit or your direct pay 40%, for instance, for going on a brownfield. Or if you're in a what they call a low-income community, if you were to site your project, you get another 10%. And on top of that, if all the benefits of the project, all the electricity savings were to go to low-income communities, terms that are defined, you get another 20%. So you can really get up to 50% of your project costs funded with this direct pay from Treasury. So it's a significant incentive that just came about in, well, I wouldn't say just came about, but let's pretend it just came about in August and is going to run for about 10 years, which is a first in the industry. This just kind of goes through what I said. There's these different incentives that you can stack on top of each other. If, for instance, you're in a low income, it's not perfectly matched up with that definition of distressed municipality in Connecticut, but you can really, if you cite these things properly and allocate the benefits properly, you can really do pretty well. And there's a plethora of other incentives too that are out there that are too much for this call. I'm just giving you examples here. So on top of that, so along with the recent federal incentives that are out there, and there's a lot more, Connecticut's got some interesting programs in particular for solar fuel cells and batteries. Some of you are probably familiar with them, but the one program that's constantly evolving is this, what they call the NRES program. And don't let the acronym confuse you. It's a commercial scale solar program. And the benefit to munis in this particular program, and some of you may be getting calls from solar developers, is if you have a vacant piece of land in town, say a landfill or just a piece that for whatever reason is sitting there and doesn't have any other real commercial use that could be done in solar works, you can put a solar, a fuel cell, or a battery there. Well, not a battery, a solar or fuel cell there. And you can send, all I'm going to say is this because it gets confusing, you can send the electrical savings to other accounts in town through the Eversource billing system. And that's only possible in Connecticut if the projects are located on municipal land, state land, or farmland. So municipal land is something that many energy developers are really targeting in Connecticut right now. And on top of that, not only is this program limited to your land and state land and farmland, but if you were to site these on, remember I'd said this in the federal program, on a brownfield or in a distressed municipality, you get an extra 20% in terms of what you're going to get paid per kilowatt hour. So even if that's confusing, just understand that not only does the federal government have very strong incentives for munis, and in particular, distressed and low-income munis, but also for brownfields. And on top of that, the state does also. And these are, you know, I know Hartford, East Hartford. I didn't have a chance to go through this list too exhaustively. Your member organizations that do fit the Connecticut definition of distressed. So the other thing that's interesting too, and it's a little in the weeds, is even if you're not a distressed municipality, but a project were to go up there, this might not sound so attractive to you, but if the benefits, not just the lease could stay with the town, but if the savings, the electricity savings went to a distressed municipality, you also get those extra incentives. So the state and the federal government are really targeting distressed and environmental justice communities, as you can tell, both in IRA and in sort of versions of these new programs. I'm not going to go too much into battery storage because I feel like it would just be too confusing. But as I said earlier, the federal government through IRA has incentivized the standalone batteries that don't need to be coupled with solar. There are many reasons to put a standalone battery in a building. Could be anywhere from a short-term backup to alleviating, for those of you who pay the electric bills in your towns, to reducing those demand charges. On top of that, there's some benefits to the grid itself. And in Connecticut, generally the way they structure it is you get control over the battery during the school year, let's call September to June, and the utility wants to control the battery in the summer so it can pull on it during peak periods and do other grid services, things like that. In Connecticut, so on top of the 30%, this is just an example, they actually offer a very big upfront incentive. So if you're going to buy a battery, they pay for almost half of it. So you can imagine on top of the 30%, the federal government would give you. Connecticut also has a very strong upfront incentive. And then there's a whole slew of operating incentives that would go along with it. But they're really, as far as states go, they're one of the forefront of pushing these standalone batteries, these energy storage solutions. So these are just the numbers. The program is actually run through the Green Bank, and they're shooting for 580 megawatts of behind the meter batteries, and then a bunch out on vacant land. And again, the difference is it's too much in the weeds for this introductory call. And then, of course, fuel cells, not my area of expertise. I've had a couple of fuel cell calls recently to better understand the technology, but fuel cells for the most part are similarly incentivized under IRA with the same level of direct payer tax credits. And they're also eligible for most of the programs I just mentioned in Connecticut. So as I said, the focus is really simply, we want munis to drive where and how these generation or storage systems go, not just react to getting phone calls from developers to say, listen, we've got these buildings, we've got this land, this would work. To focus and to some extent on communities that they call them grid edge communities that experience the most outages. And UConn's got a collaboration, a partnership with Eversource, where they've mapped all these, and I'm not sure if it's online or not. And again, like the federal government and like the state, we sort of follow in their footsteps and focusing on distressed and low-income communities, and in particular, energy systems that can also be, we call it islanded, meaning pulled off grid during a storm and allow a building to keep operating, or a microgrid type system that would do that most likely through gas during a storm event. But, and again, this is the ideal. If you came to us with, say, hey, we're getting a lot of calls about solar on our landfill and we're not sure what to do, we're also more than happy to to tackle that and consider it in sort of a consultant role, taking you through in an advisory position, ideally to the point of construction. I think we're in it for the long haul and want to see stuff get built. So that is it. Sorry if I was confusing. It's a morass of complicated bills and laws, but that's kind of the goal, is to confuse people enough where they pick up the phone and call us.
Well, Kurt, thank you very much for your overview. It is pretty complex. I know Windsor's been approached by a few folks in the last 6 or 8 weeks regarding battery storage and a few other things. So I appreciate the complexity. I'd like to open it up to members of the committee for any questions to Kurt and the role that Circa might be able to help us. So I'll open up any questions, comments, ideas.
Quick one from me, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
Thanks. Kurt, do you mind sharing your email address? I'd probably like to talk to you more offline, but the town of Plainville is currently capping a landfill. And the town manager and I are talking about potential options, one of which is solar. And I think that's kind of the preferable option. So I'm kind of interested in learning more about what you had mentioned in your presentation.
Yep, I put it up there. And you know, part of this is, you know, we don't have time for me to mince my words, so I'll just be direct. You know, solar developers, like commercial real estate developers, are interested in that little input at the bottom of their financial spreadsheet, their rate of return. And that's not a fault. That's just the truth. So there are a lot of things that they're being given, for instance, to do a deal in Hartford that Hartford may not know about, or East Hartford or Torrington or Winchester. They might get an extra 20%. So one of our goals is to make sure, for instance, Torrington would understand, like, listen, the market's this, they should be offering you this because they're getting these benefits. And the problem with a lot of these federal and state incentives, if you can believe it, is they give the incentives to the developer to put up a project in a distressed muni, but they don't mandate that they pass those benefits along. And so, like the good capitalists they are, they're not going to do that unless the town makes them. And that if the town's going to make them do that, they have to know about it first. So it's kind of an educational exercise. Listen, they're getting a 20% benefit doing the project here, and they might get another 10% if they, so you should ask them for upside. You know, it's just helping the towns negotiate from a better standpoint.
Is Circa participating in these meetings, or is this something that you kind of prep the town beforehand? What's the role?
You know, I think early on, as we don't have many projects, we're going to participate. You know, I mean, my personal, you know, there comes a point when everything's well papered that, you know, one steps back and lets the developers run. But once those first documents are signed and the business terms are negotiated and we feel like the town has been well protected, and the town lawyers have been well advised, then, you know, there's a period of time where, you know, they have to go through permitting and all that, that we wouldn't be as involved, but certainly up front, we would participate.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Great. Any other questions that folks have? I'm just looking at here, and just jump in if you have any. One question I have, Kurt, is what kind of staff capacity are you drawing from other folks, other departments, or you have a standalone staff of one or two or three or?
Yeah, no, the goal, I think, is to, you know, when it comes to, for instance, batteries, you know, we're going to defer a lot of the technical expertise to the Green Bank. But when it comes to the solar with batteries, the nutshell is we're a staff of one right now,
yep.
But a staff of one that's been through the trenches for 15 years. So in terms of being able to spot problematic things that you're being told by developers and helping steer you in the right direction, it's a fairly straightforward process for us. As things, if it grows and things get bigger and we end up working with three or four towns simultaneously, then we'd have to talk about adding more. But right now it's just, it's a couple of us really on staff.
Great.
Thank you.
Right. And I will email you the presentation, Kim.
Great.
Thank you.
So, well, this is, it sounds like it could be a great resource for communities. We're all, I'd say some of us have different sets of resources. So it's always nice to have another group to be able to bring to the table to guide us and make sure, if nothing else, we're asking the right questions.
Right. And we're happy to answer questions. We're happy to get more involved. The programs change all the time with Pura Dockets, and you might get a piece of paper or an offer. And if you have a question about it, just shoot me an email and I can take a look at it and be like, this is what they're trying to do. This is the market. This is what they're getting. You should think about, you know, asking for this. We probably could even run a good RFP process for you. We've got the right documents for that in place. And that's the lawyers in Connecticut are pretty energy savvy for the most part, especially the ones that seem to be advising towns, but they're not as focused on it as we are. So we can certainly help them with their, with like a lease review or a purchase and sale review or something like that.
All right. Well, Curtis, thank you very much. If there's no other questions, we appreciate you giving us this quick overview. And as I say, in the chat, Kurt did put his email address. Kurt, you're more than happy to stay on and listen. But being a big whopping staff of one or two, you probably got a few other things to get working on. So
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
You know, that's sounds like there's a lot of potential there. If we can get a little bit more horsepower around him, but sounds like there's a lot of possibilities. And so if it's all right, we'll move to our PIP. First, I want to say congratulations to the CROG staff that worked on putting together these grant applications. That's great to be able to walk away with three grant awards, and now the hard work starts. So, Madam, I turn it over to you and let you lead the discussion relative to the three grants.
Oh, thank you so much, Peter. So I'll start off and ask Pauline to chip in as well. But to begin with, I really want to thank our staff, our team, for all their hard work in putting four applications together, as well as the committee support. And you know, you all will recall, really, it was the survey we conducted several months ago and your input that helped shape these four applications. We did not receive, interestingly, the grant to create a regional economic development initiative. And going into it, we thought that was the one that was most likely to be funded. But anyhow, I have had an opportunity as a member of the Connecticut Association of COGS to meet with the OPM secretary, Jeff Beckham, and they are very, very interested and serious about promoting the regional delivery of local government services. And I think you can see that with these three awards. So, Kim, if you could bring that back up. So we'll go through the three. First of all, the grant we're receiving for assessment services, $462,000 over a three-year period. And what we're planning to do here for both this as well as code enforcement and animal control, recall, we're looking to create a supplementary service. We want to be able to supplement the services that are in place in our municipalities. You know, for example, when you have a vacancy or when you have a particularly busy period, that you'd be able to purchase services from us. think over time, potentially some of our smaller communities could rely on us almost exclusively if we're successful here, And then another thing we'd like to do in the future, and Peter and I have discussed this as well, is could we add training components to these three programs? For example, where we could train someone who's looking to become an appraiser or an assessor. We could train someone who's looking to become an assistant building official. But with assessments, we're going to have funds for a director, full-time assessor, as well as a part-time administrative assistant. And there are 6 towns that had agreed to participate in this application. Others can join in if they wish to do so. But we're going to start off by organizing a meeting of these 6 towns to talk about the fact that we received the grant and what our timeline is in terms of moving forward. We're also going to meet with the Assessors Association. So we want to be able to meet with the association to talk about what we're planning to do and to get their input as well. And hopefully have an opportunity to address any concerns that the association may have. You know, we have heard, this is somewhat anecdotal, but we have heard that some of the professional associations are concerned about the regional delivery of services, just seeing it as a potential threat, if you will, to jobs in our municipalities, which is not the case. You know, we don't see that the case certainly long-term, and we want to be able to, both short and long-term, we want to be able to address that proactively with these respective associations. So we'll organize a meeting of the 6 towns, we'll meet with the association, and then we'll commence our recruitment for the regional director. And it's going to be absolutely critical to find the right person to fill the director's shoes for each of these three programs. If we can move on to the next one, Kim. So for building and code enforcement services, we're really going to be focused on building inspection in particular to begin with. You see the funded amount, a little over $446,000. With this funding, we'll be able to hire a full-time director, 2 part-time inspectors, and then an administrative assistant. And there are 11 towns that had decided to participate in this application. We'll convene a meeting with all 11 and then follow that up with a meeting with the Building Officials Association and then commence our recruitment to hire the director. And then last but certainly not least, animal control, approximately $471,000 there. We're going to have funding for 3 animal control officers. There are 11 towns that are participating. So due to workload concerns, we're going to start off with the other 2 first, and then we'll pick up animal control roughly 6 months from now. So we're going to lead off, and we were clear with OPM on this. We're going to lead off with assessment and code enforcement /building inspection, and get those recruitments underway, and ideally even people in key positions before we begin work in earnest on the regional animal control officer positions. And just recall, this grant funding is designed to extend over a 3-year period, and the state will subsidize 70, and correct me if I get this wrong, Pauline, as I recall, it's 75% of the cost the state will subsidize in year 1, 50% in year 2, and 25% in year 3, with the understanding that in order for the program to be successful, it will need to be funded through another funding source starting in year 4. And we do see all of the member towns paying for these services, participating in the program on a pro rata or a per diem, not so much a per diem, but on a pro rata basis in terms of how much staff time is allocated to their community. So let me stop there, ask Pauline to add any key details I might have missed, and then we can open it up for Q&A. Pauline?
I think the important aspect of the match is that our intention is that by the time we get to year 4 is that the participating towns will be funding fully the different positions so that it can be a self-sustaining program at that point in time. So that's why there's a tiered match. It's not a requirement by OPM. It's what we submitted for the for our RPIP grant application.
Great. So let's open it up to early questions. I know there's going to be organizing meetings in the coming weeks for those interested. So Matt, one question that comes to my mind is if there's towns that did not express interest during the initial application, is there, what's that process for them at this point in time? Is there a process at this point in time for them to express interest?
We can incorporate them. Pauline, I believe you had this conversation with OPM in terms of, I don't know if that would require an official amendment to the grant agreement or not, if you could explain and elaborate there.
Yeah, I don't think there's a requirement for an official amendment to the grant application in terms of the participating towns. I think towns have the ability to join and drop out throughout the process. I think at some point in time, we will say once you're committed, you have to be committed for at least some period of time. You can't just drop off 2 months after signing up. But other than that, there's actually, ironically, there's a requirement to notify your bargaining unit when we're applying for the grant application, but there is no requirement once the application is approved. So go figure.
You're right. So I'm going to open it up to questions. Any members have questions?
I think Peter, Bob has one.
Yeah, hey, Peter, I've got a question. Do you have to be, and I think you kind of already answered this, but do you have to be a participating member to use these services once it gets going? If let's say we had a vacancy down the road and we needed a building official for 2 weeks. Is this a service that would be provided to any CROG member that needs it? Or do you have to be one of the participating members?
I think over time, Bob, we want to be able to address that need. So any of our 38 towns, if they've got a vacancy, if they've got a busy period, et cetera. And obviously we would charge for that service.
Sure. Yep. That's to be expected. And until you reach that 4-year mark, obviously there's a match that the state's looking for. Where is that match going to come from? Is it from towns that in that 3-year period that use the officials? Is it being paid from CROG until that 4-year point? When you switch over from like a CROG match to the municipalities paying for it?
Pauline, you want to handle that?
Response? Yeah, I think the intention is that the municipalities, when they use the services, would be having some sort of requirement or, you know, some sort of payment. Whether it matches exactly to the 25, 50, 75% is probably not, but something close to that so that, and then there'll be some CROG match. CROG is already matching it with staff time. Already as well, that the grant application included some of that. We're using regional services grant fundings to support the staff time, the CROG staff time that we're spending on this. But yes, I think the intention is that there would be some sort of towns would be matching or putting in some funding as they use the service.
Okay. And all these staff are going to be housed in CROG? At the new building.
So what we're contemplating right now is the director of the first two programs, assessment and code enforcement. The director and the administrative staff would be located at CROG. The part-time inspectors, part-time staff, they could be assigned and working out of a member town. And also getting at your earlier question, Bob, I think CROG, at least in the first year or so, will probably have to help subsidize the director's position.
And I think it also depends on what the position is. So, you know, clearly, like the ACOs will be in the communities, for example, and the building officials who are doing the inspections, they'll be in the communities when they're in the communities doing the inspections. But in terms of actual location of where they are when they're not in the communities, that's, I think, TBD. I mean, let's say there's a, if there's a town that's, for example, borrowing a building official, if you will, for, you know, because theirs is on extended leave, that person might be housed at the town for an extent, for a longer time, I think it depends on the needs at the time and the number of hours that the town is utilizing. So if someone's utilizing, you know, someone 50% of the time, I would think that we would work out with the town a location that's more convenient for the member, the participating member town.
Okay. It sounds like a promising program. We need to get some of the details worked out.
Yeah, no, we're very excited about it, you know, and this will be a big step forward for us. You know, the committee was very involved in helping us put it all together, and staff did great work on these applications. And I think it will evolve over time. I mean, we may get into some type of specialty disciplines, for example, in building inspection. You know, maybe over time we develop a strength in plan review, and that proves to be very beneficial for our member towns, so that your own building officials can focus more on inspections, et cetera.
Right. Do I see anyone else that have a question or a comment? Matt, I would guess that in the next few weeks, the member towns that have expressed interest would be getting an invite through the either selectman's office or CEO.
Yes.
Great. All right. Well, again, thank you very much to staff that put together the packages, and look forward to getting this up off the ground in the next 6 months or so. So I think it's going to probably take that long to iron out details and do recruiting and all that stuff there. And the deal is, you just can't steal any of the existing assessors or building officials.
Maybe we'll go outside the region for the stealing of the.
All right. Very good. Well, hopefully there's some folks that are, you know, are out there available at this point in time. So, all right. So, item number 6 on the agenda is municipal information sharing. What do you guys got out there? What are the hot buttons that we all should be aware of? Anything, if you've stepped on a landmine, let us know so we don't step on the same thing. Anybody? I have a question out there, and I guess I just popped into my head when I was talking to my assessor about the grand list. It's that time of year again. And looking at the motor vehicle cap at 32 mils. And this, my understanding is those towns that are above 32 mils did not get fully reimbursed for the motor vehicle, the lost revenue. And we got down into the conversation about what happens when they change the whole valuation methodology a year from now, where we in Windsor, we could see approximately conservatively a 20% reduction in motor vehicle value because they're going to the MSRP, depreciated MSRP versus the current blue book or whatever they, NADA. So has anybody else been looking at that in terms of impact to your grand list, either for this upcoming budget session or beyond? No. So I guess I put it out there just to be aware of it. There is a bill that's been submitted to the one of 5,000 different bills that have been submitted by state representative from Windsor Locks and East Granby that talks about delaying the implementation of the new valuation methodology, push it out 1 year. So something to keep an eye on. I'm not sure where we weigh in, where CROG might weigh in on. So, hey, Matt, you got your hand raised, I see.
Yes, thank you, Peter. So on the motor vehicle, you know, those towns that were not reimbursed pursuant to the cap, is that something you'd like us to make an inquiry on?
I would like to, just to see where that fits, and or at least make sure that the administration knows that that's
okay. I'll coordinate that with Pauline, and we can reach out to OPM. And then secondly, I am concerned about our communities that have a sizable commercial and office space component to their grand list. You know, looking at all the office vacancies, I am sure that's going to lead to any number of assessment appeals and ultimately impact your respective grand lists. And I'm wondering if maybe statewide we're going to need something of a legislative solution or assistance on that point. Peter, I don't know if that's something you're talking about in Windsor or anybody else that has a decent size office space market.
I just know we're looking at our revaluation is coming up a year in October 23, and we're looking at anywhere from 35% to 45% loss in valuation for our office. So I know it's going to vary, but I would think Farmington would have the same thing. East Hartford, obviously downtown in Hartford, would have a big possibility as well. So I'm not sure how the state could handle that one, but at least they could try to make us whole on motor vehicles or some of the little things that, I'm not sure who's on revalue. I'm not sure whose revaluation cycle is, and how CROG, if you know what percentage, you know, is in October 23 or October 24. I'm not sure how that calendar lays out, but certainly the concern I have is that on motor vehicles, especially for next, to try to implement the new methodology, could be, especially communities that have revaluation at the same time, that could be a big swing. I mean, all we're doing is putting it back onto real estate.
Right. Well, I think we've been concerned about that for a while.
Right. So anybody else have any thoughts on that or anything else on information sharing? To share with us, okay. All right. Kind of gets to future agenda items, and these are some things that have been raised in our previous meetings. I think we're going to, I know we have RPIP, the three grants that we just talked about. We'll as those develop, those will be a regular staff report coming out. Like today, the Circa stuff was a little bit of a information sharing that kind of came up in between meetings. But these are the items that you folks had identified in the past. So Matt, if you want to talk a little bit about land use planning and where, how that fits in. I know we're hot. You guys are recruiting now for a new director position. Maybe you could share a little bit about that and how that may play into some discussions here at Municipal Services.
I'm happy to do that, Peter. Thank you. So later this week, we will be interviewing applicants for our position of Director of Regional Planning and Development. It's a reconfiguration of a position that we used to have formerly. And we're really excited about the candidate pool. And want to thank the members of our recruitment panel who will be working with Cheryl to conduct first round interviews later this week. And Peter is serving on that panel. Thank you. Thank you for that, Peter. So you may recall from our conversation a month or two ago, we wanted to bring this position back so that we could focus more on the needs of our land use planning community. You know, think about our town planners, zoning enforcement officers, et cetera. We'd also like to bolster the services and programs we provide in the environmental planning, if you will, field. And the Brownfields program will be moving over to this department for that purpose, but also looking at the larger field of sustainability. And then we'd like to look, we're planning to locate our economic development initiatives within this department too, and see how we can build on that over time. For example, most of our communities don't have dedicated economic development staff. I'm sure many of you on the call here today, you know, you perform that function at least to some extent in your municipality. And we'd like to build that program over time as well. And I think this committee can be really helpful in terms of helping to identify the major needs we have at the local level with respect to the disciplines I just mentioned. You know, what are the major needs that you have? What do you see as upcoming trends? We also understand that our region has a lot of diversity, right? And the towns have different needs. Like from a planning perspective, a smaller rural community is going to need something different than a suburban community might. For example, a smaller rural community may be focused on farmland preservation. What are best practices related to that? Some of our suburbs are really struggling with affordable housing and TOD. What are best practices with that? And then our larger urban communities looking at any number of reforms to local zoning in order to promote redevelopment. So we understand that the needs vary across our membership base. And we want to be able to serve all of those needs and really bring on a trusted resource here at CROG and get this department established.
So,
is that helpful, Peter?
Yeah, it is helpful. And one idea that pops in my mind is, you know, maybe this committee could help either through a survey tool or something like that, be able to get some help, some flesh out some of those ideas that Matt just had, which might give some direction to Matt and the new director, some areas of higher priority. Obviously, we could do it through this committee, do it to the entire membership of CROG, but perhaps that's something where we can be a sounding board and it provide some input.
We did talk about once we get the person hired, we would have invite our planners to this meeting,
mm-hmm.
To a meeting of MSC.
Right. Yeah. So we've got several items here. I'm not sure if there's any interest in DEI initiatives, and I think that was really along the line of sharing what each of us are doing in that area. And I guess I'm looking to, can you take down those that I need to see everybody, Kim? Thanks. Is there any interest in, you know, over the course of, you know, we're talking about basically from now until June, that's when really our calendar is, and then we take the summer break. And I'm just looking to try to, staff has way too much on their plate, to be quite frank with you. And I want to stick to our knitting if we can, but at the same time, I want to make sure these meetings are productive. And I'm very much into information sharing. And so I'm not looking necessarily to start new initiatives, but to look at, as Matt said, look at needs, trends, best practices. That's kind of what I'm hoping for. I raised up the motor vehicle because that's something that we all face to different degrees. And if we can use this group here, this time once a month to share ideas of how we're handling that I find that helpful, and perhaps you folks don't, but I'm just looking for some guidance here so we can kind of keep our hand on the rudder and see which way we want to tack. So if there's any items here that are on this agenda, the DEI initiatives, well contamination has certainly been raised in the past. I'm not sure about GIS update. That could just be simply an item. So Matt, you raised, I saw you.
Yes, OPM wants to come in and meet with us. And we want to bring in Eric Stoughton from our team as well, just to talk about the state's work in conjunction with the COGS to update our GIS platform and the potential services we're looking to expand upon in the future. And then on the DEI one, Peter, you know, we just want to give a bit of a refresher on the consulting services we have available. And I think we wanted to hear a little bit from our colleagues to see who has embarked upon a DEI initiative. What have you learned from that? How's it going? And just encouraging other towns to do the same.
Okay. Oh. All right. Anybody else have any strong preferences to on these items or anything to add for future potential topics? You guys are making it very easy for us to do what we want to do. All right. All right. Oh, but please, if there's ideas that come up in terms of topics, please, again, share those with myself, Matt. That way that we can kind of plan out what the next 3 or 4 meetings will look like. So, all right. What have I missed? Anything else for the good of the order?
I think that's it from staff's perspective, Peter. I was wondering if you had a moment or two to stay on to help plan for the next meeting.
I have all sorts of time for my lovely Krog compatriots. So, all right. Thank you very much, everyone. I appreciate it. And let's give Kurt up at UConn a good run for his money here. Let's give him some work. All righty. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care. Thanks.